Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 22, 2023. Definition of intellect and its levels. Question: if we talk about intellect, then today there is no single definition of this concept. There are several directions according to which classical science defines intellect. First, intellect is a quality consisting of a person's ability to recognize new situations, the ability to learn and remember based on experience, understand and apply abstract concepts, and use their knowledge to control himself and the environment. Second, intellect is a general ability to recognize and solve problems, which combines all the cognitive abilities of a person and his ability to understand various situations. The third definition is very short and concentrated. Intellect is, first of all, the basis of goal setting, resource planning, and a strategy to achieve the goal. How would you define intellect? Answer: I am closest to the third definition. The most important thing is still the goal setting and the way to achieve it. Question: if you dive into this definition of intellect, then scientists expand it a bit and consider that it operates on three levels. For ease of understanding, let us call intellect an agent that does something. The first level is the agent achieves the goal, but everything is controlled by a person. For example, a calculator or a computer. A person sets goals for it and fully programs and controls it in every sense. The second level is the agent has a goal set by a person, but the intellect chooses the ways to achieve it. For example, an artificial intelligence that learns from some data. The formation of neural connections takes place in it, and on their basis, it can offer something new. That is, this is not programming, this is the creation of something new. And the third level is an animal or a person who sets goals and develops algorithms for achieving them. Animals set some simple goals and methods to achieve. A person sets more complex ones. But is it correct to say that a person sets goals for himself? Answer: as part of our activities, life, and communication, we, in principle, whether we wish it or not, set goals for ourselves throughout life and everything that happens to us. From CabTV's Kabbalah Express, July 31, 2023. A thing in itself. Question: during life, a person acquires life experience and learns from examples and abstract concepts. This is similar to the training of an animal when we set some tasks for it, give examples, and some kind of reward for performing them. Based on the results of these actions, we evaluate whether the dog is smart or stupid. Is a person trained in the same way during his life? Answer: of course, we evaluate ourselves and everyone else only in relation to our tasks. Question: some information is constantly entering a person. There are some calculations going on inside him that are concealed from him, and he acts on their basis. How can he catch the reason for these actions in order to justify them? For example, with artificial intelligence, it is clear that a person sets goals for it, gives it a database for training, and even evaluates what is good and what is bad in its actions. How can this be determined in relation to a person? Answer: there is nothing we can do about a person because the higher nervous activity is also taken into account here. So this is harder with a person. And it will get harder with machines. If we are talking about self-learning algorithms, then it will be difficult for us to establish the right attitude to the machine. And to a person too. Therefore, we treat each other purely externally, one cannot go inside the other. It is unclear how and what to do with this person inside himself because he is a thing in itself. From CabTV's Kabbalah Express, July 31, 2023. A game of two systems. Question: in the introduction to the wisdom of Kabbalah, it is said that there are two systems, the system of holiness and the system of klipot, Impure forces. What are they? Answer: the fact is that the desire originally created by the Creator as a desire to receive can be corrected to a desire to bestow. If the desire to receive is opposite to the quality of light, wants to receive everything into itself, and be filled with light, then the desire to bestow, on the contrary, is similar to light. And to the extent that it resembles the light, it comes closer to it. Thus, from the desire to receive created by the Creator, the desire to bestow is formed as well, and we work with these two desires. Therefore, the system of holiness and the system of Klipot work against each other. The desire to receive and the desire to bestow are opposite each other and play out between themselves either a direct or an inverse relationship to creation. Question: does the person not exist here yet? Answer: the system called man appears after everything is created and distributed. A person is someone who begins to consciously work with the systems of holiness and Klipot from down below, up. From Cab TV's Preface to the Wisdom of Kabbalah, July 30, 2023. What to do if your children do not call anymore? Comment from a letter. Dear Michael Leitman, I am asking for your advice. We raised our children, gave them everything, and they disappeared and do not even call. They are not in our life. My husband started developing dementia. I take care of him by myself, I literally fall down from exhaustion. I have no strength anymore. Our children are gone, our children have abandoned us. Why are they so ungrateful? What did we do wrong? Why couldn't we instill some basic respect for us in them? My response: we are not talking about basic respect. Maybe children are somewhere far away, busy with something, they have families, they have everything. But old people demand care and attention. I mean, I understand both parents and children. The modern world is not made in such a way that we live together as several generations under one roof. Even children do not get attention, let alone the elderly. I do not expect anything else from the world. In no way. Perhaps it will happen so that people will work half a day, and they will have a lot of time and will really devote part of it to parents, part to children, and part to themselves. Question: are you saying that we need to understand our children who are distancing from us with their families? Answer: we ourselves have prepared such a life for them. Comment: but this is not exactly how we lived, I remember that. My response: we did not live like that because we were in a different world. Comment: by the way, you yourself have always said that it is good when three generations live together. My response: it was so, but now it is impossible. So, let's stop talking about fantasies. Question: then the question about the future is, what will we come to in this way? Answer: we will come to the point that we will have to really rebuild this world in order to make it more human. Comment: you are still in favor of these good human relations one way or another. My response: everyone should understand what they have to create, what kind of world they want to see. But, of course, this will not happen today or tomorrow yet. Question: what should enter a person? What kind of world should he want to create? Answer: a person must be imbued with desire, compassion, love, and concern about others. About others in general and not only about their relatives. When he understands this whole system we all have to participate in, then together with others, with strangers, he will be able to create such systems of interaction, support for infants, children, youth, and so on, up to the elderly and all others where everyone feels good. Question: you have just said a key phrase. You said that a person should understand in general this system in which we exist. Then will everything start falling into place for him? Answer: yes, of course. Comment: this is the most important moment. We do not understand this strategically. My response: no, we cannot depict this picture for ourselves. Comment: we can say that the world is interconnected, but we do not imagine this picture. But the world is like that. My response, the world is like that. Comment, and these connections are good ones. My response, these connections are good, and they do not end in this world. They continue in the next world. Therefore, in addition, we must understand where we are and how we are included in each other, where such a combinatorics takes place between us that we cannot escape anywhere, we need to have a good attitude to each other all the time. Question: I am leaving and coming back, I am leaving again and I am coming back. Does all this take place in this system? Answer: yes, everything is in this system. This is called that there is no death, as it were, and everything is infinity. Comment: this is beautiful. I wish people would understand this. My response: there is no need, this is very hard. Question: but will we come to this understanding? Answer: yes. But we have to be ready for it, and on the other hand, we have to be ready to do it and understand that it will be better for us. We should not look at it as a huge responsibility. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Lateman, July 31, 2023. The Light of the Creator, Support and Help. Comment: I can quiet my evil inclination only when there is the light of connection in the group. And when it stops shining, the evil inclination immediately takes possession of me. My response: very good. This means that you must constantly ask to be influenced by the light of the Creator, the power of the Creator, which will keep you in the right state. Nothing else is required. It cannot be otherwise. How do we have the strength to resist egoism? Only if the Creator will shine on us. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, August 6, 2023. My heart is slain within me. Selected excerpts from the sources. We are not obligated to wait till the end of 6,000 years. Question: has the possibility of unity and mutual guarantee ever been realized? Answer: yes, the possibility of realizing unity worldwide first emerged in ancient Babylon 3,700 years ago. Abraham attempted to accomplish this, but was able to take only a few thousand people with him out of Babylon who, under his leadership, were able to form a mutual guarantee among themselves. The rest scattered around the world. Today the entire world resembles a global Babylon, and we must return to global mutual guarantee on a worldwide scale. This task must be completed in a maximum of 217 years, but it could end much earlier, possibly even in our time. Currently, the year is 5783 according to the Jewish calendar. We do not have to wait until the year 6000 as we can attract the appropriate forces and accelerate this development. In case the world follows the path of suffering and is pushed forward by evolution, then it will continue until exactly 6000 years. But if it follows the path of light, drawing spiritual actions, corrections, and changes in us, then time will compress to just a few years, and that is all. After all, 6,000 years are 6,000 changes. These are no longer years as we transform them into our inner changes. However, if we will not do this, then physically on the timeline they will still have to be realized within 6,000 years under the pressure of nature. And if we add the pressure of the right environment to nature, then we will accelerate both the path and the time. From CAB TV's I Got a Call. Kabbalistic Calendar, September 3, 2011. New Life 252. The Influence of the Residential Environment on a Person, Part 2.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lateman. Hello, Dr. Lateman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza. Hello. And today we'd like to better understand how does the environment that we live in, the residential area that we live in, affects us, not theoretically, but in order to thoroughly understand how can we make our life better. On our way to a new, more happy life, we'd like to delve into each of the components that affect our well-being, our happiness in life, and to know how to work with it, so that life won't just be something that happens to us, but that we'll know how to manage it to our benefit. And today we'd like to focus on how does the environment that we live in affect us and our family. Nitza, take it away. So maybe I'll start with a story. When I met my husband, he said, "You really want to get to know who I am? I'll take you on a tour." And he took me to the city where he grew up, and he took me to the neighborhood where he grew up, and the school he went to, and the playground he played on, and here we played soccer, and these were my neighbors, and this where we hung out. And I felt that it awakens in him lots of emotions. And when I asked him, "Why is it so important for you to bring me to this place?" he said, "Look, it doesn't matter that I'm not living here for over 20 years now. It's a part of me. It's a part of who I am. If you want to know who I am, this is who I am." And also, we have another friend. He's from the city of Dimona. And when he's kidding, he says, "I'm not living in Dimona for years now. I left Dimona, but Dimona did not leave me. It's still living inside of me." What I want to say is that even when we grow up and we move to some other place, something from our neighborhood, from that place, stays a part of who we are. It affects how we behave, our worldview. Through that, you see the world. Yeah, exactly. And this is something that we'd like to clarify. In general, it's clear to us that, yes, the environment has an effect on you, but how exactly, this we don't understand. So the question is, how could it be that a certain place has such an effect on who I am? How could it be that it really shapes me in a way that afterwards I take it with me everywhere? Yeah, that's called your years of growing up, of education, of upbringing. That's how we shape ourselves. A person who's born is just a small, egoistic desire to receive pleasure. But to receive pleasure from what? To be drawn to what? What are his values? In general, the ladder of qualities. He has nothing. These are all things that you have to fill. It's like a computer that I buy, and then I need to fill it with programs, and this is how it's going to work. The same with man, and therefore it's no wonder that what fills us is our close environment, our home, then the yard, the neighborhood, community, and it has a very strong effect over us. So much so that we can't get rid of it. We can't push update and bring new programs instead of the old ones. We're not a computer made out of metal, and so we can't determine anything new this way, meaning for sure. And why is it called, for example, your mother tongue? Meaning it's the tongue by which I programmed myself to decipher things. That's my inner language, that whatever I hear, I nonetheless translate it into my language. Sometimes people know another 20 languages, but still, inside, they're not even aware of it. They translate it to their mother tongue, because the mother tongue is the emotional language, where every word has an emotion of its own. And it goes from the intellect, from the hearing, from the perception of sounds, waves, doesn't matter, to emotions. It's the innermost program. The same, the innermost program exists. Not only for our mother tongue, but for our entire behavior. That the behavior that we were impressed by, what we saw at home in childhood, what is a family supposed to be like? What is the yard? How should a neighborhood be? It's all inside of me, like an example, like a standard, like a measurement according to which I measure everything. And I can't escape it. I even saw it on Americans. I have an American friend. He's a known lawyer from this one place. And once we went to another city, to the university there, and we met many people there, and among them there was someone that they found out that they're from the same city, from the same place. Afterwards, I couldn't get him out of that. He wanted for us to specifically do everything with that person and be engaged with that person. Meaning not to do business or something, but to write articles together and do the research in the university, etc. Precisely with him. Why? Because it's close and it's a wonder. And I saw that among the Americans, it's something that's very much felt. Because it's a kind of country that, you know, the dynamics there is such that you move from place to place, etc., etc. But no, they have this nostalgia. A connection to the city they came from, the place they came from. It's very important to them. So, the first program that we get until the age of 18, 20, sometimes more, sometimes less, it is an inner program that it's like the motherboard. Like what we call in computers. The same way with this mother program, the mother tongue, etc. It's like we got something a bit from outside of the womb, but it belongs to the same source. And the rest of life is no longer called mother. That's outside of that already. Therefore, it's very important to us if we want to make some kind of changes in humanity and man, to ease things up for them to some extent, change direction, then once again, you need to go out to the same communities, yards, and change things there, meaning to bring people back to the right, proper community life from which they will later copy these things to the rest of the world, because one is related to the other, and especially in our time. The way you presented it is that my neighborhood is my lens. Now, I want to see things through that. How does my neighborhood, what kind of effect does it have on my sense of security? When you grow up in the right neighborhood, environment, yeah. Then, besides the womb and your crib, and then my room, and apartment, and then I, and the neighbors, close neighbors, and then the yard, and the neighborhood, etc., etc., these are ever-growing circles that I move away, further and further away from home. I leave home, but still, I come back home. I only go out to broader circles. So what broader circle do I go out to? Only to those in which I feel security. If you're asking about the sense of security, that I feel that I'm nonetheless connected to my source, and even though that I move away from it, I don't lose connection with it. Look how we make insurance, we're connected to our country, we know that if something happens in some foreign country, then they need to help me, they need to send someone to help me, to bring me back, etc., etc. Meaning, we're all the time building around us broader, bigger circles, but still that we'll have this feeling of security that we're going back to our source, to our center, to the safest place, to mom. What happens to a child then that grows up in a neighborhood, average neighborhood, not just a prestigious neighborhood? How does it affect his self-confidence? He needs to adapt himself to the environment. This is the condition on which he'll feel himself safe. it can be in the worst possible neighborhood. Then he needs to be as bad as everyone else, and then they won't see him as someone foreign, and then they won't be against him. They'll have no attitude towards him, and then he'll feel safe, secure. This I don't understand. My sense of security depends on the measure to which I suit the environment. If the environment is plus 100 degrees, I need to protect myself from the environment. If there's radiation in the environment, I need to be protected from it. If the environment are strange, evil people, I need to be protected from them by armor or something else. And if I don't have these things, I need to be like them. I need to accept their manners, behavior, all of their laws. And then I'll assimilate in them. And what they have, I'll have. They won't be against me. Meaning, it all works according to the law of equivalence of form. Which law? Law of equivalence of form of man with his environment. And the measure to which I equalize with the environment, a more balance with the environment, pressure, heat and cold, different parameters. If I am balanced with the environment, I feel comfortable. And therefore, we see, we get dressed when we feel cold. We undress when we're hot. We have air cons, we have different things. Why? Because we need to be adapted to the environment to some extent, as much as possible. But what do I do with people? So, like in the modern world, I go downstairs to the underground parking. There, I'm in my car, I close my car, and go out with the car. And this is how I feel myself inside the city. And I go to work, enter the parking, I go up to my office, and that's where I live. Meaning, I all the time protect myself from the environment. But if I'm in an environment that is, suppose, threatening, and it's a very specific environment, so in order for me not to be treated as a foreigner, and if there's something foreign, it's like with germs, we immediately want to eat it. The same happens with the environment of people. We can't stand anything foreign. We're willing to accept someone, something foreign, if he gives us pleasure, some great actor, poet, scientist. If he gives us pleasure, gives us good concerts, develops something good, then we're willing to stand him, even to respect him, only on condition that he fulfills us, gives us pleasure. But if not, we disregard that person and want to take him out. And therefore, a child, naturally, when he goes out into the yard or to his environment, community, area, neighborhood, he simply must receive the same form as they have. They're playing something, he needs to play something. They're riding their bike, he needs to do the same. He can't do it otherwise. Also, his protective urge, his ego, is pushing him to take on the same form as them. Why? Because then I feel that I'm like everyone. I can play with everyone, connect to everyone. They treat me the way they treat themselves. Because a person is nonetheless a social creature. We're carrying around with us that same inclination for that big family like we used to live in caves and tents where everything was common. A child likes that everything's his. And how can everything here be his? When he's involved with everyone equally, engaged with everyone equally. Again, everything can be his if what? If he's engaged with everyone. We play ball, I can't be an individualist. Why? Because then everyone will disregard me, won't allow me to play with them, won't allow me to be near them. How is that? I feel that I have to connect, to come closer to them, and to come closer. That's according to the law of coherence of form, according to balance. Just like all of nature has an inclination toward balance, the balance of pressures, heat and cold, the same with people. Every person in relation to his environment, a group of people, has an inclination to be inside that group, to assimilate in it. This is what all politicians use, sociologists. It's well known. How did dictators do it? What did Hitler do? How did they make it so that such a developed nation suddenly started following him hysterically? He built a small but very strong, threatening group, and everyone wanted to be a part of that group, because otherwise they felt that there's a threat over them if I'm not a part of the SS, for example. It's something well known. That's how everyone uses it. That's how it was in Russia and everywhere. So suppose I'm a child in a certain neighborhood. What do I feel? You feel that you want to be with the grown-ups, with the big and strong, which is practically the same. And then you're drawn to them. Unless there is really a very special cut that the two don't mix. I saw this in Manhattan, in North Manhattan, in the area where Afro-Americans live. In Harlem? Yeah, in Harlem. Once I even gave a lecture there and things. There, that's interesting. You have many yeshivas there. Yeshivas for ultra-Orthodox Jewish women. My son met his wife there in the middle of Harlem. Unbelievable. No white person there on the street anywhere. And ultra-religious girls. But there is the complete differentiation. Yeah, that's what I said. No one touches the others. The big Afro-Americans, don't look at them. Don't look at them. And they're not afraid, even in the middle of the night. 10, 11 at night, they walk around, these girls. I was afraid to go out. And really, for me, it was dangerous. That's something else. But not for them. Yeah, because they're of no interest to each other. Right? There's no connection between them. And they're already used to each other. These are already used to these, and those are used to those. And what I want to say is that kids, they can't be that way. He wants to learn from the grown-ups. He wants to be a part of them. He looks at them. There are many in quantity, or they're big, naturally a child wants to integrate with them. And therefore, there's no other choice. Why did I give the example with Harlem? Because there no one learns from the others. That's clear. That's how it is. I want to give you an example in order for us to understand what does a child feel in a certain neighborhood. You're saying that he wants to be like the big and strong, that he wants to be with them. I'm almost 40. I grew up in a village, a small village. To this day, I have this experience in my head. Every day, after school, we all studied in the same place, and after school, we used to play soccer. It's very clear, everyone's together from morning till evening. And I remember this one experience on the soccer field where some grown-ups, I was a child and someone who was 5 or 6 years older than I was, this one time, he really humiliated me. I was a very good player. And he as if really disregarded me. He says, oh, and now he's wet. He's not. What do you want from him? He's not. And to this day, I'm trying to understand how many years went by. 30, probably. To this day, if he comes to me in my dream, it's like he did it now. Yeah, it's like he's the revelation of evil in my world. Now, let's put him aside. What I want to say is, going back to the question, what does a child feel in the neighborhood? Dependence. Dependence on everyone. What kind of dependence? Because that's his world. This is his world, and therefore he's dependent on them to the measure to which he will know how to get along with them, to establish good ties with them, to serve them, to give them, to suck up to them, so to speak, and do everything as long as they relate to him, accept him, that he'll feel that he's an insider. Because once he's inside, then maybe his ego pulls him to be greater than they are. But first of all, to get in there completely. That he is in them. Like in the womb. It's the same law that a person's drawn to the center of security, which is that womb, that crib of his, home, pacifier with a small teddy that he's used to. And that's how it is with everything. And of course, if he discovers something big, he always needs to identify, where is my place of security? Where am I in the most protected place? Like in the womb. It's the same inclination. We want to go back to the womb, always, subconsciously. And how does it show in the neighborhood's relations? That you want to get along with them, because the neighborhood's the womb. You want to be on the inside, in the safest state. What does it mean to be on the inside? To be inside means to be together with everyone, for everything to work out fine and be good, and that as much as you can, you're in control of the situation. To be in control of the situation means to be on good terms with everyone as much as possible. And then, according to the ego, to be in control of the situation, meaning that you're even in control of them. So, it's interesting. There are two things here. The one is the desire, the need to belong like a child at first, in order to feel safe, because if I don't belong, I don't feel safe. And then, if I can, then you start twisting and turning them, doing different politics with them. The main thing is to be in control of them. The main thing is that they're under you, beneath you. And this is the problem. Our problem is that were we to see that the goal is to be together and only, and not to allow our ego to erupt, then we'd develop in a good way. We'd stop ourselves and we wouldn't have reached the current crisis that we have in the world today. But our problem is that we're connected and that this connection continues and is now working to our detriment, that we're destroying it. Okay, suppose we're like doing research. We're following such a child that grows up in a neighborhood that's relatively a good neighborhood. Things are all in all okay there. But there's no community life. Everything's plastic. Right. How does it influence a sense of confidence, safety? He doesn't connect to others. And how does it influence his sense of safety? So he grows up like them, so he chooses the same professions that they have, and this type of relations at work, and family relations, and kids, etc., etc., everything in the same way. And catches depression. Why? Because we nonetheless need a feeling of warmth in life, of love, connection. This is what man's lacking, missing. If he doesn't get that, then he feels depressed. This is the reason for which today more than half the world are depressed, taking different medication, etc. Why is there such an inclination toward drugs? What, marijuana was discovered only yesterday? They didn't know about it before. I was recently in Colombia, and I was among the Indians, real Indians, native ones. And so they chew different such leaves, like gut. Yeah, similar, yeah. And really, I'm sorry I didn't bring you any. It tastes how much it suits you. There's nothing about their behavior. They also say that it helps them concentrate, etc. It's a kind of plant. And also marijuana. You have that there and different other things and opium and whatnot. But they don't use it. They use it only for medical purposes, for example, if necessary. And today, we see that people in the big cities are consuming these things because they simply have to. Have to, because otherwise there's no other way to lift your mood and calm yourself down. So living in a, like you said, plastic place where there are no relations, then a person needs to fill himself with a feeling of warmth, with a good, nice, warm, convenient feeling. A person's all the time drawn to that feeling of the womb, because this is where he came out of, and as if he never came out of it. Ideally, he needs to feel, in all circumstances in life, as if he never came out of that feeling of the womb, that everything's safe and good, and there's plenty of everything, and it's safe, and he's protected and kept and cared for. Really like when he was inside his mother. So if I make a comparison between a child who grew up in some neighborhood that's relatively simple, but there are interactions between the children there, then to some extent there is something like that system called the womb. There are friends, there's participation, mutual help. He sees that everyone's like him too, etc., etc. This is a state that we'll need to go back to. We won't be able to stand for much longer the system of relations that we have today. So a child that grows up in a neighborhood, you call the concept chatzel, courtyard or neighborhood, where there's social life for the kids of different ages. In the common area that they live in, could be a neighborhood, could be a suburb, could be a farm, could be whatever. But all in all, there's a geographic area where the kids interact on a daily basis. This option A. Option B is a state where there are barely any such interactions. But that there's me, my school, the clubs that I go to, this is where it starts, this is where it ends. Sometimes I can go to a friend that doesn't necessarily live in the same area. Now, these are two completely different states. Now, I'd like to analyze it in relation to the feeling of the womb that gives a person a sense of confidence, warmth. You said that modern man is depressed because he doesn't feel the warmth and sense of security, confidence, etc. So this is what I'd like to ask about. The child that does have a rich social life, it's not that there that mom hugs him. It's social life. There are different kinds of interactions. He has friends, suddenly he has enemies, suddenly this, suddenly that. The interactions aren't only pluses. It's like an experience that the other child doesn't have. No. You're comparing between rich and poor for no reason. It has nothing to do with one another. I don't mean materialistically. Because kids can play with a shoebox. I meant a rich social life. Let's take someone who grew up in a neighborhood where there is interaction between the children. They have social life. They have a social life, as opposed to someone who doesn't have a social life. He goes to school, comes back, goes to a club or something. What's the difference between these two children in terms of a sense of security, warmth, etc.? A child starts acknowledging in the right environment the relations between people, how to build relations with people. He starts developing. Sometimes they're in struggle. Sometimes they're in competition. Sometimes they're connected. These against those against these, everyone together, etc. It's not only black or white, but he develops. And nonetheless, everyone are friends one way or another. And so accordingly, how many games he goes through, discernments, if he has interactions with the right environment, with a live environment, what does it give him in life? He doesn't just come with his dad to the slide, slides a few times, and goes back home. But he's with kids, and they're playing. They're not just throwing a ball, but all of us together reach some kind of goal, or one against the other, someone more, someone less. It doesn't matter how, in favor or against. Later we'll see how important that is too. That nonetheless he learns how to connect with people. How do I need to give to the other, receive from the other, and how important is the feeling of a friend, that together we can do much more than I do on my own. He grows up. He's a social creature. He's not a human being yet, but he's not a grown person yet, but he's already a social being. So you're talking about interaction or lack of interaction? Of course. What are kids interacted with today? With a computer screen? What do they see in life? Cartoons, in the best case scenario. Or who knows what they watch in their room. It's very important. Why? Because otherwise the man, the human part in him doesn't develop. The human part means that he connects to others. The end of our development is to be connected together as one man and one heart, to be connected in the image of one man, and to feel that we're in a world that is like a womb. That's the final picture. Whether you want it or not, we'll need to come to that. All of the forces of nature, this entire program called nature, takes us there. Despite many opinions, many contradicting things, above all that, we need ties, such ties that we will be as one man inside one world, like some kind of like a person developing in a womb, and then a child that has no interactions. How can he reach this kind of correction? How can he reach this kind of connection? The future of the world is to really be connected in the best possible way, above our ego, above everything. So I'm connected to others through my mobile. No. That's not a human connection. You can't. You're not connected to them. You're connected to the database. So, if you can explain, it's not a connection. We know what the problems of the computer people are. That they live like the computer. I remember that there were kids that grew up in an environment where really there was lots of interaction, so they grew up to be people who know how to get along in every situation. It's called streetwise. Like, they have this wisdom that other people that only sat and studied and didn't go out have. Now, what you're explaining here is very meaningful. Where I live, the environment that I live in, is really a place that can nurture this street wisdom in me, or I'll be disconnected from it. That's very meaningful. I want to ask about depression. Depression is the result of the lack of the proper connection with the environment, that I don't get the right fulfillment that I'm supposed to get from the environment, because man is a social being. Take a monkey, put it in a cage by itself. After a few days or weeks, you'll feel that the monkey's ill, depressed, that he's lifeless. We immediately identify that. He needs someone. He needs a spouse. He needs kids. He needs other monkeys, a group. Then they start fighting and whatnot. You see what goes on there. Go to the zoo and see. But they need it. And noise and everything, and you're looking, what a mess. Maybe sit them apart. If you sit them apart, they'll die. And we came from monkeys. Were you to give them a smartphone and another monkey a smartphone in different cages with complete communication between them? Then you'll see, modern man, that's exactly that. The monkey turned into a modern man, sitting all the time playing on a smartphone. And, yeah, but sometimes there are interactions with others. It's not interaction, because if we're talking about grown-ups that communicate between them in order to convey some kind of information, that's something else. But if you want to exchange the relations between people to relations that run through media lines or some program, it won't work. What you want to say is that now I'm disconnecting a child, children all together from each other, and give them smartphones. None of them have the template of a society inside themselves. They didn't grow up in a courtyard, in a neighborhood. They didn't grow up in an environment. You're putting that child into a computer. You need a computer that, in case that you're not with the environment live, then at least this is the kind of interaction that you have. So all these smartphones, they help you to make the connection that way. Make this kind of simulation that as if you're with them, but you know what he feels. You have this inner template. You build this model, this picture on the inside of what does he feel, what does he want. It's like a mom calling her child. So she feels him, he feels her, meaning they already have preparation for it. And then in some cases, the virtual connection helps. Compensates. But if this is how you raise children, each in their own cell, like in a prison, they have no interaction, they have no nothing, then you see what they do on their mobiles. It's completely empty. You just said that they don't have this inner template of a society because they didn't grow up in a neighborhood with the neighborhood. Let's try to compare it to something else. You said that today's kids, they have clubs, but they don't have the so-called courtyard, the neighborhood. These clubs don't give them anything. So what if he goes? Well, there are other people there. Yeah, but they don't go there in order to connect with each other. So he goes to judo class or gymnastics class or something. What kind of connection do they have there? If already, then soccer is better. It's a team game. It's at least a bit better. And also, no one works on their connections there. Each knows that I'm playing here and he's there. Each is a professional, not a friend. Like when you were together playing soccer, where you grew up. There's no human connection between them. The only connection between them is a professional one. What do you mean? That I don't need you as a human being, as a friend. I need you only in order to play. After the game, I don't look at you. You as if don't exist. The game's over, that's it. You're not in my field of view anymore. So I don't teach people how to connect in life. What I teach there is only how to play soccer. And that's why all the soccer that you see today, it's like you buy a player, put him in the group, and nonetheless, psychologists start working with them, special people, in order to tie them together. In order for them to be together and connect with one another, because really it's impossible to play normally if you don't help each other, if you don't feel that you're interdependent, that you understand each other without words or nothing, even without movement, that you live inside each of the other players. Look, I'll tell you. All this talk about community life, for me, is really difficult. Because even though that it's been more than 16 years since I moved to the city, but before that, I grew up on a farm. In a village. Now, when I look at people that live and raise children in the city, God help them. So it's even difficult for me to understand. I'll just ask the question. I just wanted to share this feeling. On the first day of second grade, when you're like 7 or 8, on the first day of school, we played in the schoolyard. I fell and I broke my pelvis. For 2 months, I had a cast up to here, the entire right leg, half the left leg, and something connecting between them so nothing will move. I was laying that way for 2 months. I had a friend that used to come to visit me every day. I couldn't go to school, of course. I was in bed. He used to come to me every day after school. And maybe for an hour or two, I don't remember. He used to throw me the ball, and I, laying down, used to header it. He throws, I header. With your head. Yeah? Because here I had no cast. He throws, I header. And that was allowed. Yeah. I only couldn't move my pelvis. And I don't even know why does this picture come up, but between us there was a connection with the kids around me. And it's not only the kids my age. I had the same warmth with my brother's friends that were a year smaller than I was, or my other brother's friends that were 4 years older than I was. It was a kind of experience that, if to analyze it now as a grown-up, we didn't care really what we're doing. The main thing was that we do. We used to run to the hills. We used to slide down the hills. We used to go to the orchards, drive our bikes all around. Someone falls, someone this. Doesn't matter what. The main thing is that we'll finish school already, where we were together anyway, and that we'll have the other half of the day for our adventures. Now, when you're saying that a child goes to some clubs, some this, some that, what is that? Even when we wanted to learn swimming, so came a bus to the center of the village, took all the children to a swimming lesson, and all the kids go together and come back together. It was like a small detail in the very rich life that we had. Of course, everyone's different, someone's good at that, someone's good at this, but I don't know how to explain. Nothing to explain, it's clear. This is something that you can't exchange for anything or buy anything else. And so now that you're living in a big city, in a neighborhood, in a modern neighborhood, so you need to make sure that your kids have an environment like you had. Try to start doing it. Actually, on these talks, as I understand, we're oriented on approaching a situation where we will understand, is it or is it not possible to do something like that in our condition? Because if not, then our kids are really miserable. What are they missing? Because materialistically, they have everything. Look. I'm a researcher. By character, I'm a scientist. And so, I'll explain it more globally. We are the opposite of nature. Nature as a whole is a global integral system that is interconnected in all of its parts, like in our body. Every cell is connected to all other cells. And people that have an ego that separates them, and free choice to connect above the ego correctly, need to realize themselves this way, and the right proper connection between them to connect exactly like a healthy living body that's interconnected in all of its systems. We need to learn from the still vegetative and animate levels. How do we, the speaking level, human level, need to arrange our society? That's the preferable development and the development that exists in the plan of nature. And according to this plan, we need to reach a good, nice, mutual, integral connection. Integral meaning interconnected in all its parts in a good and nice way. And we're not building, we're not teaching people, raising them this way, educating them this way. And that's why each generation is more frustrated, really miserable. Why does it have to do with misery and frustration? Because man is that same monkey that lived in a group of monkeys. That's how it is. He can't be by himself. He can't put him behind a computer, build screens around him, and he'll live through these screens. You'll see what will happen to him, the kind of illnesses and problems that he'll have. It's indescribable. Not even to mention family and sexual problems, the things that we're starting to see now that's really becoming a global blow to mankind, and more and more. It is all a result of the lack of proper connections between people. Well, in addition to the food and the air and all the ecological conditions, it says about that it's not good for man to be alone. Suppose now I want to look for a place to live. And as a mom, I understand now that interaction is something very important, and I'd like to find an environment that would be good for my kids. How would you define a good environment? I have no idea where can you find it. That's the next question, but what is a good living environment? That people feel themselves obliged to be connected. That every few days, I have some kind of meeting, some kind of get-together, sing songs, have a small meal together, that they don't sit at home. Don't sit at home. They sit together. They're together. That the kids play on the same playground, that the fathers and sons do some activity together, and the mothers with the daughters. That too, in our world, is so intermixed that they lose the connection and the root of the sex, which is also important. Never in, let's call it, primitive life, there was no intermingling between the boys and the girls. The boys, they followed the fathers, wanted to be great like them. The girls took an example from their moms. We broke here such subtle conditions in man that by that we're really corrupted the very foundations. It's not that I have some kind of inclination towards something, but simply I bring facts that this is nature, and you can't do anything against that. And all the modern solutions need to understand, where does it all grow from? Because here you have many interests of different people that gain off it, and it's worthwhile for them, and they don't care what happens to people, with the masses. And if so, then I'd see a society, an environment, an area, a neighborhood. I'd see that there is a group of residents working there, a small group, that's getting together in order to improve the social situation in that place of living, in order to improve the local social life. And then they invite the residents to talk about it, think about it. Maybe they make some kind of a virtual closed circle between them when there's nothing to do until they leave home on holidays or in some way. I don't know. I'd open some kind of a place where there's mutual help. Maybe you know how to nicely put on nail polish, and Oren knows how to help with counting according to his profession, etc., etc. In different ways. Maybe for children, maybe someone needs additional help with their homework, maybe someone needs health advice or something. Let's feel that we need each other. In the meantime, in this simple way, but later on also in conversation, let's invite someone to teach our children how to juggle, etc., etc. I was in this special environment where they invited a magician for children and kids from the entire neighborhood. And if it's the kids, then the parents too. Some join them because who knows what goes on there, etc., etc. Came a magician, and I followed this neighborhood. It was in the city of Rehovot. Then the next time they invited a person with snakes, and children touched the snakes, and he hung the snakes on them, and, you know, it was frightening to see, and he explained to them that there's no need to be afraid, etc., etc. It was very nice. Meaning it's possible to do different such things with the help of a group of parents. And through that, people start connecting. Look, I grew up in a place that's similar to where Owen grew up. That we had a backyard and a neighborhood and everyone knows everyone, etc., etc. Then when I came to Israel, I entered an ultra-Orthodox society here in Israel. And there, too, they have different mechanisms of mutual help, etc., etc. And I saw that, nonetheless, there is mutual help, mutual consideration, also according to certain laws of theirs, but that there is an understanding and such a feeling. And so to leave that place to some city, it's hard for them. It's impossible. So we need to learn how to do it. How to do it? But I think that it's through children, through women, through mutual help, through the different activities that we give, by helping them with different problems in life, that people help each other. Now I see that on the streets they have these containers for secondhand clothes, etc., etc. People start understanding that it's worthwhile. We can do it in our area, have an entire storage for different things. We can have big refrigerators that people will bring their surplus, and then we can divide that, etc. Because a third of our food goes to waste. Why do that? We really need to do nice things. We can buy gas and electricity and water together, and also food. It'll cost us half the price. There are many things that you can do together in order to gain from it, to get material gain from it, until they'll understand through different workshops and different other kinds of connection that will give them this feeling that there is an inner benefit to it. Security, calm, tranquility, a good feeling. And a year later, we can check if we checked before this action, before we went into this neighborhood or environment. After a year, we can check how many people got rid of depression, different problems, kids at school, divorce. And you can have statistics on it. And in that, you can really succeed. People will be grateful for it. If I understand what you're saying, the measurement for a good neighborhood is a neighborhood where there are lots of interactions between people. Right. In feeling, it doesn't necessarily have to all the time be running around to each other. But in order to make the inner interaction, there also has to be, in the meantime, an external interaction. So once a month, we'll have some big feast in our common park or yard. We'll arrange tables, chairs with kids, with everyone, lots of noise, sing-alongs with guitars, with something. For sure. We'll ask our teenagers to play there, play and sing. For them it's an honor. We'll invite a magician for the smaller children, for him to play with them. It doesn't cost money, to the contrary. What's the goal? What's the goal of community life? A person, by connecting to others, he starts getting this feeling of warmth, security, a feeling of that womb, of the source that he comes from. He starts feeling that his life is not his life. Meaning here we're exchanging the sensing, the sensor, meaning that I'm no longer living my lonely life in my apartment, but that now I feel a broader vessel in which I feel life, meaning my feeling of life is many times greater than what I felt before. And then, as if went out into the big broad world. And this feeling is the best feeling, because it takes me above time, above space, above everything. I'm like in the air. My senses broaden, and then a person feels that this feeling is worthwhile living for. I felt it especially when I was in South America. I got to know someone who became rich, and he lived in a favela, an area for people that really have nothing. And he became rich. He didn't leave the place. He built a nicer house, not much nicer, but nicer. There are people that build there, but don't leave that place. Why? Because you don't have that feeling of vitality. What he got from childhood, he can't get it from living on the 20th floor with a swimming pool on the roof, etc., etc. You don't have that. They understand it and feel it and stay in the same place. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Mitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Michael Lateman, on Quora, how do conspiracy theorists come up with new conspiracy theories? We come up with all kinds of conspiracy theories primarily because we do not know where we live, why we are alive, where we are headed, and what is good and bad for us. We are confused. We can think of ourselves like little children who were placed into an open store, and who then play with all kinds of objects in that store, running around and bumping into all sorts of things, but who have no clue as to why they were placed there to begin with, and what the store's rules are in order for everyone to enjoy themselves optimally. That is how we are in our world. Therefore, if something significant and extraordinary happens to us here, we start examining the phenomena from several different angles. Who caused it? Who benefits from it? We start looking for who to blame. Ultimately, we cause our every misfortune, but it is not as all kinds of conspiracy theorists emphasize, that there are certain people acting in a goal-oriented manner. We can think about it similarly to a volcanic eruption, a tsunami or a hurricane. We might have caused such phenomena indirectly, but not on purpose. No matter how rich or powerful certain people are, they cannot change humanity's fate. It is because nature is the general collective force and it includes and sustains each particular and individual force within itself. It rules over everyone and everything, and it does not let any one person or group of people move anything even 1 millimeter in any direction. If there are any individual forces that wish to break out and take control, nature simply does not let them. Every person is a small part, an individual aspect, of a general system that is governed solely by the force of nature. Therefore, the ultimate conspirator is nature itself, which governs everyone and everything according to its higher plan, higher because it is beyond our minds to comprehend. Based on the video, why do we conjure up all kinds of conspiracy theories? With Kabbalist Dr. Michael Lateman. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Lateman.